This is an ABC podcast.
Big Tech.
Well, it's time for Big Tech, a weekly segment on RN Drive where we learn a little bit more about the kind of world that's growing around us very quickly, and maybe we just saw a demonstration of that in that previous discussion. But you could soon demand that tech companies erase your data and sue them for privacy invasions and even avoid being targeted by businesses using sensitive information in the near future. It all comes under a federal government pledge to move towards a strict European-style data regime, which is in response to a two-year review of the nation's privacy laws. With us to discuss this and more is Lizzie O'Shea, a lawyer and the founder of Digital Rights Watch. Lizzie, run us through what the government's proposing here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's an exciting day for privacy advocates, I have to say, because we've been waiting for this for a while. There's been a lengthy process of review of the Privacy Act, and the Attorney General has come out and said what kinds of things he plans to move forward on and what kinds of things he doesn't. And it's a really interesting day. The Privacy Act is long overdue for reform. It's pretty astonishing, really. It wouldn't pass the pub test, I think it's fair to say. Technology has really moved forward, and a lot of the concepts are really outdated. So personal information, for example, it's more than this, but it's often things like a name and address. It doesn't include, for example, things like locational information, which now, of course, is commonly available through devices we carry around but isn't properly regulated by the Privacy Act. So the attorney, for example, has committed to updating the definition of personal information. But also many people will experience ticker box consent where, you deal with a company online, you give them consent to use your information, and then that ends up being totally open-ended. And again, the attorney has said he wants to reform the Privacy Act to introduce things like a fair and reasonable test to improve consent requirements. So these are things that are well overdue, bring us in line with lots of other comparable jurisdictions, which is a great step forward. There are bits and pieces in there that are a bit more problematic, I think, but overall, I think this makes a lot of sense. And included in that is what you mentioned also, the ability to go to court and sue, which is currently not possible. You can make a complaint but under the Privacy Act, but not in open court. And I think it's well time that that's introduced. And so I'm glad to see that he's also committed to consulting on that, but hopefully introducing it in a reform bill next year.
Yeah, I guess in theory it's good. I wonder how enforceable it is and how many people will have the time and capital to go ahead with a legal option.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think there are access to justice issues. I think that can be dealt with. I work as a class actions lawyer. I think class actions are a useful mechanism for that, for if you've experienced only a small amount of harm or you don't have the resources to take on big companies. But yeah, I mean, I think the other question is, can the attorney follow through on this? You know, privacy laws are well overdue for reform and a lot of governments have failed to act. And I do feel like we're a step closer with this response today, but I do also want to see the proof in the pudding. You know, we want to make sure that this actually gets turned into law because, they're potentially a pretty significant adversaries, including, industry, as you can imagine. They might be worried about the costs, but also, media organisations have expressed concern about that. I think there's ways to manage all this. And so I'm hopeful that he kind of sticks to his guns and introduces this reform because I don't think we can afford to continue on with these outdated laws.
Well, another one of the things we learned this week is that the government's rejected recommendations to give people the unqualified right to opt out of personalised advertisements. Why is that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, a lot of consumer groups are pretty disappointed in that, and it may be that there's scope to lobby the attorney and see if he'll change his mind on this. I think there were some underlying concerns. It was an opt-out that I'm not sure was as fulsome as it might think. It's an opt-out of seeing some of those targeted ads rather than actually the underlying kind of profile process that goes into it. But I think a lot of people feel pretty icky when they see targeted advertising. You know, they maybe aren't sure how some of these companies get access to information that then leads to targeting advertising. And there's a whole murky world that's kind of beyond everyone's comprehension. And I think the more people learn about it, the less they like it. So I do wonder whether that's going to be a more controversial aspect of his response. response and it might change. We'll see.
Yeah, it feels like a whole lot of people looking over your shoulder all the time, doesn't it?
Indeed, yeah. Indeed.
Now, X, which is what we used to know as Twitter. It's such a silly
name. It's hard to take that seriously, I know.
It really is. It's removed the ability for people to report a tweet that contains misleading information. And yeah. The timing of this is kind of, you know, for in Australia, around the referendum, unfortunate. And the timing of it in other jurisdictions around the world has also been the subject of questions. Why is the company doing that?
Well, that's a good question, I think. So, you know, you could normally report content for things like hate speech or harassment, but there was also the capacity to report it as being misinformation in a political sense, and they've taken away that capacity. And it's a good question to ask why, because it's terrible timing here. We're going into a process for the referendum where I think there will be potential scope for misinformation to creep into platforms. I mean, I think we're sort of starting to see it already. And this company is just kind of throwing up its hands and saying, well, we're not going to do anything about it. I think part of it is, you know, under Elon Musk, they've gotten rid of their safety team. They don't actually treat safety very seriously. You know, I was thinking about this before we spoke and, you know, the ECFT commissioner did write to them earlier this year saying, clean up your act because you're going to get in trouble if you don't. I'm not sure whether they've done that. And this sort of seems like the next step towards doing the opposite. And I do wonder whether that's kind of sustainable because there are rules around this and particularly in relation to safety, there's rules like the increase of hate speech may not be something that the ECFT commissioner is happy with. And she has the capacity to issue fines. But it's, you know, it's the latest step in a pretty loose company that doesn't really concern itself with community values or a sense of obligation to public notions of truth or accountability. It's pretty loose and I think increasingly not many people like spending time there and that may be the ultimate consequence
well,
of these
perhaps
kinds of decisions.
Some do and maybe, you know, conflict is a business model. That's another question, isn't it? Lizzie yeah. O'Shea, look, thank you for getting us up to speed on those two issues. Very interesting.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.